the mic to introduce
you. Is that okay?
Of course. Wait.
She's decided to give up to the mic to me. That's great.
I'm going out to get some chips. Chips and salsa.
My name is Jane Olson. I direct the Women's Center here, and we are celebrating 20 years of service to the SCSU campus community, and we have done our entire series this year on the issue of empowerment, advocacy, and education in celebration of that. A couple housekeeping items before I introduce our distinguished speaker. One, and you've heard this before, turn your cell phones off. No one's rushing. A few people are. Please stay until 12:50. We'll end right at that time so you can get to other commitments. It's really disruptive when people leave early, and it's also a courtesy to our speaker. And finally, please complete the evaluation form. You get to actually do a rating, but the other thing we ask are questions about what you would like to see in the future, and you can give feedback on that. You may be aware, or maybe not, that yesterday was Pay Equity Day. Does anyone know what that is? And just shout it out. And do you know and don't want to say? Okay, well, I'll tell you. It's pinpointed, and it's always around April 20th or 21st every year. It's the day that women's wages statistically reach men's wages from the year before. So we are currently at, I think the current data is 77 cents to every dollar made by men. Pay Equity Day is the day that says women have finally caught up to men's salaries from the year before. Not a good thing. And women are saying, no, it's not a good thing. So in acknowledgement of Pay Equity Day, we're doing today's session to really talk about the issue of pay inequity, to talk about women negotiating for equity, and what we can do, I think, both personally and I would say probably on a larger scale in our workplaces to really deal with that problem. And our speaker is Dr. Diana Lawson, and she is the Dean of the Herberger College of Business. She has a distinguished career as a leader, administrator, faculty member, teacher, and mentor. And my personal piece here is I had the great pleasure to co-present with her last summer, when she really addressed topics like these, and I addressed the issue of sexual harassment in the workplace, but we spoke with a group of mid-level female managers in a male-dominated workplace, and her presentation was fabulous, and it was inspiring and enlightening, and when I saw her present, I thought, we have to have her present for Women on Wednesday. So please join the Women's Center in welcoming Dean Lawson.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. Hopefully this will be a little more interactive than just a straight presentation lecture. It's been a long time since I've been in the classroom doing lectures, so I don't want to go back doing that now. So I want to start first by asking some questions. How many of you have ever negotiated a salary? How'd it go?
It was mixed.
How?
I tried to talk about the volunteer. I worked on a statewide legal and education fund board, and I really tried to say that was experience, even though I was a volunteer, it was experience that should be counted. And I kind of got a little bit of time for that. And it was in the state system. It was at St. Cloud State.
Oh, that, well, and in a state system where they're so lockstepped into things, that's not easy. Who else? Someone else. I saw a lot of hands. Successful negotiations.
I negotiated a salary a number of years ago, and I got exactly what I wanted. I think I should just ask for more.
Yeah, sometimes you think if you get what you want, well, maybe I didn't quite build the right strategy for that. Who else?
I had sort of the same experience. I kind of aimed
the blow, just assuming that I wasn't going to get anything, and probably could have
gotten more. Others? Come on.
Frustrating because at times, you know, you feel like you're getting what you're getting because of your gender. And if it was a male sitting in front of them, that they would be willing to talk more.
Any failures in the salary negotiations that you tried to negotiate? Yes? No?
I had to walk away from the job.
So you walked away from the job because of a negative negotiation. Others? I know there were some students here, too.
Yeah, I did, too. I had a failure when I was in Illinois 20 years ago. Positions, and they were all men, in a similar classification made $10,000 more than I did, which was even then a huge amount of money. And when I left the position, it got upgraded. And I was really glad for the woman following me, but it was really frustrating that happened to me. And I couldn't negotiate up. And I left. And I came here, actually.
And sometimes you end up being a pioneer for somebody else, because you can't get what you're asking for or what you want. So this, what I'm going to talk about probably won't take that long, but what I would really like is to have some discussion about some of the issues that we're going to talk about. And I'm a little concerned here because two of my directors in my college are here, and I'm going to look on my calendar later to see if they end up making appointments for next week.
They should, though, right?
Absolutely. Well, if I'm not paying them what they should be being paid, they absolutely should be doing that. So that's me. You know that already. And in my case, in terms of some experiences that I had, one a place that I worked when in the mid 80s, I was the director of operations for a small company, and I went in and I asked for a raise. I told the boss, who was the owner of the company, exactly what I was doing and why I thought that I should have a raise, and I didn't ask for that much, but I thought it was reasonable. And he said, you know, he said, you don't need a raise. You're going to get married someday and someone will take care of you. So I stayed with the company a little bit longer and then moved on. So we all have our little examples. So I'm going to start with some research, old research and newer research. Some of the research, as I started looking at this, really gave me pause and broadened how we need to think about it. But here's some background first. The GAO used to be called the General Accounting Office. Now it's the General Accountability Office. Part of the government, they track this data. And for the last two decades, women have consistently made about 20% less than men for the same experience, same education, same job description, et cetera, et cetera. But some of the other things that they found, women are less likely to work full-time and to leave the workforce for longer periods, having children, changing direction, things like that. Being the caregivers in the home and having dual responsibilities, many times they'll have to leave the home for longer periods. The next one I thought was quite interesting. Men with children earn about 2% more than men without children, while women with children earn about 2.5% less than women without children. So the gap is moving in both directions. In a later study, and I'm going to talk more about some of the stuff Babcock and her colleagues have done. Babcock is an economics professor she was at Carnegie Mellon. I'm not exactly sure where she is now. Women who work full-time and have never taken time off for children, the gap is much smaller. There's still a gap, but it's only 11% instead of 20 or 23%. So we already are starting to see that there are some lifestyle components and factors to this whole salary stuff in terms of where the salaries are between men and women. Another thing that I think is going to affect this is if we look at the downsizing of companies over the last couple of years because of this economic downturn, 85% of the people who were downsized or who lost their job are men. So it's changed the proportionality of men and women in the workforce, and now for the first time we have more women in the workforce than we have men. It's going to change the statistics too, just because of the overall number of people that they are counting. The simple answer, all right, don't get mad at me, okay? It was in the papers. It was published. So I'm just reporting. But the simple answer is, everybody go get Clairol blonde hair dye. Queensland University of Technology published in the Journal of Economic Letters, surveyed 13,000 women, and this is what they found: blondes make 7% more than women with dark hair. They tended to marry men who earned, on average, 6% more. But 78% of the 100 top billionaires have wives or longtime girlfriends with dark hair. All right, yes?
Can I just interject something here? My mom told me, and I had never noticed it until she mentioned it, that she told me, like, 5 years ago, she made a comment on, she watches Fox News, gag. And she said, every woman commentator on there, you look like one.
It's true. I've looked. It's true. They're all light blondes, not even natural blondes, but very light blondes. That's true. So the question is why? And of course, the researchers are trying to figure this out, because it's not because of education. It's not because of any other physical component or factor. That was the only difference they found. And this also, you have to question research when you see things like this. But anyway, I had to bring it up because I saw it online. It was there. Why?
Social construct.
Elaborate.
Like, it's been known that, like, blondes have more fun, you know, for instance. That men like blondes because blondes have more fun. And really, it's just a stereotype, and it's always been like that throughout the whole years, and it's just normal. It's just a normal fact, and no one wants to, like, the path of least resistance. No one wants to, like, step out of that.
It's a social stereotype that maybe we have accepted as the norm for how we subconsciously evaluate people.
Another thing that comes to mind is, I read about a summer institute that Warren Buffett attends in Idaho, what's that ski resort, Sun Valley, every year with a lot of other heavy hitters. The nannies that they hire are all blonde, young, you know, like college-age women that are all blonde and fair skin.
This goes again back to subconscious stereotypes that we have, and when we make first impression assessments of people, we take the way they look into consideration, even though we say we don't. We do. And it's become pervasive across our cultures, especially in the Western cultures. This was in Australia that the study was done, or perhaps that's the reason why. I think another reason or excuse was that because of the dumb blonde, blondes have more fun, dumb blonde stereotype, there's a subconscious reaction to say, well, I'm not calling them a dumb blonde, I'm going to pay them more. In effect, we have no idea, and I don't know what the benefit of this is, but it's out there in the media. So it's something that we have to be aware of.
When I saw this, I immediately thought, think of the disadvantage for women of color with this data. Because, most women of color have darker hair.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so it would be an automatic double jeopardy.
And many underrepresented groups, yeah. and many groups from other parts of the world. It's a relatively small percentage of humans who have light hair naturally and fair skin, if you look at the world demographics and the world population. So I know that one of the things that we're all expecting to talk about is what you actually do in a negotiation when you are negotiating a salary. What are some of the things you need to think about? But before that, there are some other things I want to talk about. And so what I have here, salary negotiation, it's a little more complicated than just the economic component of negotiation. So I think I'm going to go through this slide first. I got two slides backwards. I told you I would talk about Babcock and her colleagues a little bit more. Babcock did some studies back in the late 90s and then some studies later on in the mid-2000s. The ones from the early to mid-2000s were published in the Journal of Organizational Behavior and Human Decision Process, if you want to go find them. And I just use excerpts from them. I did not go back and find all of the studies. But what they found is that there are very high social risks in negotiating for a higher salary. It's not just the money, but there are some pretty good-sized social risks. So she did a number of different studies. In the first studies, she just brought some participants in and had them play a game. And she said that she was going to pay them between $3 and $10 for participating in the study. And when she was done, she paid them $3 and then measured the reactions. She then changed that and did the study again, only this time said, I'm going to pay you between $3 and $10, but the amount is negotiable. So she, again, they finished the participating, it was a game called Boggle. They played the game, and then she gave them $3 and then measured the results. Then she went on and did some later studies, and I'll explain those in a minute. Let's go back. So, paid three to 10, first time. What she got was that 8 times more men than women asked for more money in study number one, when she said you'll be paid $3 to $10, period, and gave everyone three. 8 times men more than women, 8 to 1, would ask for more money. You said 3 to 10, why do I just get three? Why can't I have more? When she made it negotiable, still only 58% of the women asked for more money, while 83% of the men asked for more money. So the immediate reaction is, well, men are more aggressive and it's expected and it's okay. You know, you would expect them to ask for more, but you don't expect women to do that. In another study that she did, is she asked a bunch of master's students who were going out for jobs, whether they just accepted the offer they were given or whether they negotiated for a higher salary. 51% of the men asked for more. 12.5% of the women asked for more. And on average, those that asked got 7% higher salaries than what they had. Now, 7% may not sound like a lot, depending on your salary, but if you're in your early 20s and you have a $5,000 difference over the period of your career, that's over $350,000. And if you take that $350,000 and say you take that extra $5,000 and you just invest it, just put it in the bank account or invest it, you have an even greater difference. So it does make a difference. So what we're starting to see first, number one, is what?
Men are willing to ask, and women aren't.
Exactly. That we don't think we should ask for more than what we are offered.
We're doing ourselves a big injustice.
A big injustice. But socially, we're not trained to do that. We're not trained to be as competitive. We're not trained, when I say trained, we're not socialized to be quite as competitive. We're supposed to be nicer. Here, before I put this all up, in the next studies that she did, she had a group of participants read descriptions of this hypothetical descriptions of men and women asking for raises, and then whether or not they got a raise or took a raise, and asked participants to assess the people who in the scenarios, and then they had role play doing the same thing, had people actually negotiating and then people assessing the people who are doing the negotiation. This is what she came up with. This is what the results showed. Men were more likely to penalize women and less likely to penalize men for negotiating a salary. And that penalization is not just monetary penalizing. Women tended to penalize both men and women who negotiated and preferred those who did not negotiate. So this is not just a one gender against another gender issue. Both women just don't like people to negotiate from these results. And women were less likely to negotiate if they believed they would be dealing with a man. But no significant difference between men and women when they thought women would be making a decision. So, what is that telling you? What are any of these results telling you? We just go with the flow, right? We accept what people tell us. And what happens if we don't? We're punished. We're punished in an indirect, it's an indirect way. We'll look at some more of the results. Women and men get very different responses when they initiate salary negotiation. Even today, I don't think anyone would say, you know, you're going to get married someday and someone will take care of you. Hopefully that wouldn't happen today, but you never know. And this was in Kentucky, so when it happened in the mid-80s. Men and women were more likely to subtly penalize women who asked for more money. Now, what's really important in that result is it's both men and women are more likely to penalize women if they ask for more money. So I think we have a problem, women have a problem on both sides of the table or both sides of the desk. And what we have to do is figure out why we have that problem and more importantly, how do we resolve it? What do we have to bring to our consciousness to really figure out why this is happening? Because remember, this is a cultural socialization and we don't even realize that we do it. We don't think about it consciously. It's like a lot of our cultural reactions to cultural behaviors. Because we learn them subconsciously from the time we were born, we don't really realize that we're making some of these subconscious or subtle decisions or reactions to things. And that's really hard to get around, to figure out how you get around that, because it has to take a lot of the time in your cognitive part of your brain. These women were considered less nice. And we know how important it is to be nice, right? Men were always less willing to work with a woman who had attempted to negotiate than a woman who did not. And, of course, it made no difference if a man attempted to negotiate. Any comments? Any want to talk about this before we move on?
I really like the third bullet point because on the previous slide I was thinking, well, I don't want to ask for a negotiation then because they're just going to not like me the rest of the time I'm working here. You want them to like you.
And that's exactly right. And go back to what Jane said and what Gail said. They negotiated and lost. And what was the result? They had to move on. And that's a very important point to remember and to think about when you are planning a strategy to negotiate. Because most likely your relationship with the people that you're negotiating with will not be the same. Either way, whether you get the raise or don't get the raise. The social considerations here are big. They're really, really big in determining how you negotiate and when you negotiate and if you negotiate, because there are a lot of other factors that come into play.
Thus, it's a vicious cycle that we're not willing to negotiate.
And that's exactly what the researchers say, that that women know, based on their experience, that it's going to upset the apple cart if they negotiate, so they don't do it because it'll mess up all of the relationships and the atmosphere and environment in which you work. We'll come back to this because I do want to talk about this, because I think one of the things we need to do in terms of having a conversation is, how do we address this in the workplace, and how do you approach people and talk about it, and what do you talk about, and how do you do that? But first, we'll go to the what do we do in terms of negotiation. And I'm going to start with the side that I thought I would just talk about for the whole presentation when I first started doing this, and that's the economics. What's the structural stuff that you look at? In looking at the economic considerations, and I call them, this is the actual "I deserve more money" argument in asking for a raise. Number one, you need to know what your capabilities are and what your experiences are. And you need to look at your job description, and you need to identify how you've done things in your job, and you need to show where you have been successful, and you need to show where you've gone beyond what your job description says. You need to start looking at the facts, the objective facts in what you do in your job. You need to be able to tell stories, and this just takes a little bit of thought and practice. And one thing we have a tendency to do, we being women especially, but young people generally, men and women, as they're moving up in the beginnings of their careers, like, I haven't done anything special. I only work at TGI Fridays. What in the world could I have done that might make me deserving of a bigger raise? Or I might have a low-level job. You have to be able to identify the things that you've done that make you stand out, and then you have to be able to explain them in a short period of time. Not 10 minutes to take to tell a story. 1 or 2 minutes. And you have to practice doing it, because your tendency is like, it wasn't anything special. It does.
And I know that as an older woman with experience in the legal field, I know what I can do better than most people.
Right.
And I will tell them that.
But did you know that 30 years ago?
That's what I'm saying. I'm an older person, and I know that, you know, how my skills have improved, and I can tell an employer that and get their attention pretty quick. Because they're looking, that, you know, they want to make money, and they want people working for them that are going to help them make money.
Exactly.
So a lot of it is a marketing issue.
We call it marketing, but it's really just being truthful about some of the things that you do, which we tend not to do. We don't hang around in locker rooms talking about all the great things that we did on the sports field or in restaurants. We don't do that. At one of my previous universities, a senior faculty to me, a male, said to me, he said, Diana, he said, you just don't promote yourself and tell people what you've done. Look. And he named a few things. And it was true. I didn't do that. I just thought it was part of what I was supposed to do and that people would notice it. Guess what? They're not going to notice if you don't remind them. So what you need to do, and it's hard to do it the first few times because you feel like you're bragging, you feel like you're being a little bit too arrogant by saying, I did this successfully. You need to write it down, and you need to write out the story. And then you need to write a few of them for different situations. And after you've written them the first time, then you have to shorten them. And then you have to practice talking about them, whether it's to your dog, to your roommate, to your mirror, it doesn't matter. But if you're not used to speaking to a superior, talking about yourself, others think, well, you know, I did. You have to practice doing it. And after a while, it gets a little bit easier in doing that. Do some homework and do some research. Depending on your field, there are databases out there that you can research to determine what average salaries are for people with your same skill set, same education level, same level within an organization, number of years of experience. But it'll take a little bit of work. A lot of newspapers will publish things. There are different companies that publish salary surveys. In education, it's a little easier to find because ASCU and some of the other they're like trade associations for academics. They are groups of academic institutions that are similar, peer institutions. They publish a lot of information. The Chronicle of Higher Education publishes salary surveys every year. They have one special issue that talks about salaries. You can find the same in different industries, and you can always find things in newspapers. And then if you can't find it, start asking people. What is a general salary? Or go to the want ad section of papers, or however you do it online these days, and call and say you were gathering more information you'd like, or you're interested in the position. What's the salary range? What's the salary range? What's the salary range? Those kinds of things will start to help you to have the background information you need. Don't go in cold. If you go in cold without knowing, don't expect to succeed. Or shoot low, and maybe you'll get a little bit more, instead of really having done your homework and know what you should go in for. Negotiate objectively. And as opposed to what? Emotionally. Stick to the facts. Be professional and negotiate objectively, because that is what your boss is going to hear, whether the boss is male or female. And negotiating emotionally doesn't succeed most of the time. You can try crying, but do you really want? Maybe you want to get a pay raise that way. You have to know who your audience is in terms of what's going to work. But objectively is the most professional way to do it. And be able to talk, as I said, about the accomplishments, because that's the reason why. Because the question you're going to get from your boss, why should I give you a raise? And the answer can't be because. And it can't be because somebody else is making more money. You have to, well, it could be, right, Ellen? It could be, I guess. But you want to negotiate based on merit and based on the fact that you deserve to make more money because of your accomplishments, because of your talent, your expertise, your skills, et cetera, et cetera. And then practice. Don't go in there having this the first time you're asking for a raise. With your friends, with your mentor, with somebody, go practice doing it and get help from mentors and how you should approach people in terms of doing these kinds of things. Practice, practice, practice. Or if you have a job you know you're going to be leaving, practice on your boss and say, you're going to go in and ask for a raise. One important thing to consider in terms of doing this as women, especially since whether we like it or not, we tend to be the caregivers in the home, and we have other things we want to do. You have to look at all of those other things. Consider elements besides money that might be important to you. A flexible work schedule, having the ability to take 2 years off and have a job to come back to, having the ability to be able to leave for a month in the summer when your children are off, and the flexibility, if your boss or your organization will give you the flexibility so that you can make both of your lives work, that is really important, and as important sometimes as your salary, and sometimes maybe having a higher salary comes with higher expectations. So you have to be willing to meet those higher expectations. And I am one who, I'm not sure you can do it all. I don't think you can. I don't think you can be the perfect caregiver of your family and the perfect employee and the perfect social person and the perfect community engaged person. I think there are trade-offs. And you have to figure out what those trade-offs are. If you're married or you have a partner who's willing to share in a lot of the responsibilities, that may help you in the workplace. If you don't, that may make some other, that may require some other kinds of change in the workplace. You have to look at your own situation and you have to look at what's most important to you. Most people don't take jobs just for the money. They take jobs because of the other things they can do. And if you're early in your career, sometimes some of the experience you can get and the skills you can build are more important than getting that top salary. And so you have to take all of that into account in terms of where you are today, where you want to be in 3 years, where you want to be in 5 years, and where you want to be in 10 years. Because all of us can go someplace else and make more money, but we might not get the same experience that we have here or have the same impact on whatever is important to us as we might have here. So you have to think about all of that. And that is more of a female thing generally historically than a male thing. And if you look at the traditional 1950s where the men would go out and the women would stay in the home, men didn't do anything else except work. And if you look at men's lifestyles today, they've changed. I can look at Japan. In Japan, it was much more separated than it is here, that men were never home. They worked until 11, 12 o'clock every night on weekends, and women had a lot of responsibility because they made all of the household decisions. Well, about a decade ago, that started to change, and men said, you know, I want to see my kids grow up. I don't want to work this much. And it's caused a real problem in Japanese industry because they don't know how to handle it, because in many Japanese companies, historically, they never even considered women for management positions of any type across all types of organizations. So both genders are starting to look at other trade-offs that are important to them relative to salary. Have an alternative if you go and do this. If you dig in your heels, you have to be able to walk away. So you really have to think carefully about it, given what we have. And know your options if your negotiation is not successful in what you're willing to do. That goes along with promotions and things like that, too. And what's the worst that can happen if they say no? Most of the time they don't fire you. And you can find something else. So this is what I think we should talk about for the last 10 minutes. The social considerations. Here's what I took from the research. Women don't like women or men who are assertive, who ask for raises. And it's difficult to figure this out. So what do we do? What do we need to do in the workplace? Ellen, do you have any insight or perspective on this? Do you have to deal with this in your position at all or any of the positions you've had in the past?
I look at salary in terms of gender equity. So when I look at equity and pay across the spectrum, if women are underpaid, why are they underpaid? What are the types of jobs? You know, for instance, I'm looking right now at the prospect of layoffs and who will be impacted the most in terms of gender. And of the gender, then, what salary level would be impacted? So I look at it from that perspective in my job, but personally, you know, I agree completely, you know, when you look at economic considerations about negotiating things besides money. So are educational benefits important to you? Are
medical,
professional travel, paying for certifications? I mean, there's a lot of things that you can factor in that are day-to-day or yearly annual costs that can ease a burden that might not add $3 to your paycheck. But, you know, I agree with what you're saying, and I think that women do not like women who are assertive. Across the board, it has nothing to do with salary negotiation.
Yeah, I can vouch for that.
And I think men don't like women who are assertive either.
Oh. I can vouch for that too.
Women do more harm to assertive women than men do harm to assertive women.
Yes, I think that's true.
I think that's true. But what I keep thinking about is, again, difficult to solve. What is the solution? And again, you know, it probably sounds really trite, but I keep going, okay, continuing to point it out to managers, whether male or female, at multiple levels who may be negotiating salary. Many of them probably have no idea what this data shows.
I think many women don't know either.
Oh, I agree. And I think, so it's like changing the culture in a workplace in which you communicate some negotiation is the norm, and that, like, that again, pointing it out, awareness is step one, and then our consciousness often will follow. And I bet that there are parallels with issues of race and ethnicity, issues of sexual orientation and gender identity. I mean, I bet that there are parallels.
I think there are. And I think that conversation has to happen prior to the negotiation for salary increases. I don't think we do that in the meeting, at least not for the first time, but somehow we have to have a conversation, and I don't exactly know how we have this conversation with in general with decision makers and with people throughout an organization, regardless of the type of organization, that these are some of the cultural behaviors and cultural actions or perceptions that we have, stereotypes that we have, because people won't even know it. They'll say, no, I don't do that. No, I don't do that.
I know part of what I was told at one point in time, you know, by others in my union, is, you know, when you're on a search committee, really emphasize to the people, now is your time to negotiate. It's too late if you accept.
Yes.
And then think it's going to happen. And one thing I take from this is, you know, I do that, but I think I need to strengthen my message to those women sitting across the table from me.
Yes. And you have to know what your range is within unions. They set rules that you have to follow, and you have to understand what those rules are and understand the guidelines within those rules. So you have to know how far you can actually go. And then you have to look at your skills within in that range that would fit. And you have to be realistic about it. It's unlikely you'll get a 300% raise, but be realistic about it. And sometimes you can go into a negotiation asking for a raise where you say, okay, over the next 5 years, instead of I need it all now, here's what I'm asking for now, here are the benchmarks that I need to meet, and this is what I think I should get after I meet those benchmarks, and help them plan your future. So it might not be just a raise all at once, but over time, you can figure that out. But the discussion of social considerations, I don't think can happen at that time. And when you do bring it up, it has to be in a very conversational, not accusatory tone, and not accusatory format of bringing it up as a conversation starter in the first place. I was surprised a little bit, although after I thought about it, it makes sense. Women were just socialized to not ruffle any feathers, ever. In fact, we have to calm the feathers. So we're the ones who always say, oh, of course we'll do that, of course we'll do that. And we have to stop doing that and stand up. But then you also always have to be ready to walk away if you are really passionate and about your position. And that's not easy to do, especially today in the economy that we have today. It's not easy. So if you negotiate a salary and you don't get it and you know you can't move, then you have to come up with another strategy of, well, I'm here for at least a few more years. What can I do to build my own experiences and my own skills and abilities so that when I can move, I am even more marketable than I am today? There always has to be alternatives. Best, worst, and most likely, and always have lots of different scenarios. But you have to think about it consciously. Anything from the students? And we don't. We tend not to think about it. And we also have a tendency to think people are always going to be fair. Mm-hmm. And that what they consider fair and what we consider fair are going to be the same thing. Mm-hmm. And they're not. My definition of fair may be different from your definition of fair. So it's always good to talk about that up front and be as open and honest as you can in a very professional and objective way. So, I'm done. We're done early. Good. Thank you.